Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good afternoon.
Oh, it is afternoon there. All right. Well, I hope it's good for you as well. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Howdy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Excellent. I'm glad you're both here. Andrew, I actually wanted to start with you and an interesting story that you found that involves Ring cameras and legislation and where the two of those are colliding.
Yeah, so Politico wrote this article about this. I'm not sure how long they've been doing it, but California is working on a Consumer Privacy Act, and it basically gives Californians the right to ask companies to disclose personal information collected about them and not to sell it or delete it. Now, a lawmaker who is involved in this act, her name is Jacqui Irwin. I'm probably not pronouncing that right.
It's probably Jackie.
Jackie, yeah.
Oh, Jackie. Okay. So it sounds like she's trying to, like, impede the bill or trying to kill it, oppose it, something like that. But
now, why ever would she be doing that, Andrew?
So her husband, John Irwin, is chief operating officer for Amazon's Ring company, which makes doorbell, a.k.a. surveillance cameras. Which is obviously concerning because this bill would impede companies like Ring from their surveillance.
Or what they do with their surveillance.
Yes. And so far, it doesn't sound like she's recusing herself, even though some people are asking her to do it. A quote that I had shared in my link teaser was, "We can talk about this later," Jackie Irwin said, sidestepping questions about a potential conflict outside her office last week. It's a little bit offensive there.
I mean, what does that even mean? Like, what is, it's a little bit offensive.
I took it as, I find this, like, the way I took it is, she finds it offensive that there is a, like, that she can't overcome this conflict of interest. That's the way I took it.
Yeah, hard to know what she means, though.
But it's interesting, like, she went straight to offended. Or finding it offensive. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but what is it? That is the question.
Yeah.
And what is there?
When I looked at it, I thought it was being asked the question, that she found it offensive that it was being, that it was brought up. So
yeah, I don't think we have enough information for that.
Yeah. But if that's all she said and then walked away, like, you know, if that's all we have to operate on, I don't, like, it still doesn't look good because she never came out and said anything about changing any of this. So, you know, how does that look? It doesn't look great. And that seems like a thing that maybe should be.
I'm actually surprised that California doesn't have legislative rules, probably internal rules as opposed to laws, in process requiring a recusal under these circumstances.
Yeah.
I haven't, I live in California, but I haven't particularly looked at this situation. I don't know what those rules are, but it surprises me there aren't rules in place requiring a recusal here.
And that's where I'm at, because California has had to deal with precisely this sort of situation. And I mean that by a spouse that works at a technology company for a lot longer than a lot of places. So I would expect Washington to maybe have laws like this or rules, you know, addressing this as well, because Microsoft and Amazon. And so I would think there would be something for that, but I would think it would have started in California. So,
but these potential conflicts are not limited to technology. Regulators regulate any number of industries. Environmental regulations, for instance, can certainly hit a wide variety of different companies, and these kinds of conflicts of interest can certainly exist. And if it's not your spouse, it's, you know, your brother or your, mm-hmm. your uncle, your niece, your mom that's working yeah. somewhere. So, yeah, I mean, in other words, I don't think this is like new because it's a tech company or even limited to tech in any way, shape, manner, or form. A lawmaker yeah. should recuse themselves from participating in regulating something that is that personal. And we've seen this with in a lot of state legislatures. In Tennessee, there's a fellow who made all his money from he has a chain of pharmacies, and he's made a ton of money from opioids, and he has resisted
addressing that in any way.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, this isn't endemic to California. It's not endemic to technology, but it is, of course, obviously the latest example.
Mm-hmm. But I think part of why it seemed like an interesting thing to discuss and partly why we wanted to talk about it today is because as the companies who make this sort of tech get bigger, as they get bigger, they will presumably employ more people. And there are more companies getting into that sort of technology all the time. So it's very possible that at least as far as the tech piece of this sort of conflict of interest goes, it's definitely something that is happening right now in California and something that should be discussed and something that people should be aware of. And that's part of why we kind of wanted to shine a light on it today is to point this out. So, you know, if nothing else, at least to me, regardless of what her answer was for any of this, the fact that Jackie is continuing to oppose this particular legislation and now everybody sort of sees what they believe to be a really clear reason why, if she's not elucidating anything else on the topic, and it really just looks like it's because her husband works for a company that makes a thing that might be caught up in this legislation, that's a really bad look for her. And so I would hope that if nothing else, if she doesn't end up with a better answer, if she hasn't given a better answer already, she needs to have one soon. And it's definitely a conversation that we're going to have to continue to have going forward as more people get involved in this kind of stuff. And also about the legislation itself and making consumers aware of who has your data and what they're doing with it. And I know we've talked about how most people said, like, it's fine if you give me $5. Wasn't that the going rate, Andrew? $5 or $10? As I totally put you on the spot about something we talked about months ago.
Oh, yes. That was $5.
Yeah, $5.
If Google could, like, use your facial data.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was your face. So, yeah, $5 for your face data. You know, even with that, like, I still think it's important, and it's a conversation we're going to continue to have, especially here. So, Brian, as a Californian who would be affected by this legislation, what do you think? I mean, it's to me, as a spectator from another state, it sounds like a pretty good idea. How about you?
Well, yay privacy. I'm usually keen on privacy. I think that in large part, tech companies tend to follow the, do now, ask for permission later, mm-hmm. or not at all. Oftentimes not at all. And I think that is both part of the amazing power of Silicon Valley and tech companies in general. And it's also one of the greatest problems with technology and Silicon Valley in general, or Silicon Valley specifically and technology in general. And, you know, it's a fast moving industry. And a lot of times there are things that there are changes that are happening that we do not have the kinds of time that we have always had throughout history to deal with those changes. And that includes the regulatory framework, and it includes what companies should and shouldn't do, can and can't do, will and won't do. And at the same time, it's also super complex. It's super hard. Regulations often have unfounded, unintended consequences. So it's you know, there should always be, I think, that tension between regulators and free enterprise. And if anything, I'd prefer to err towards protecting consumers. That's my personal aim. And there you have it.
Awesome. I'm with you. I'm generally pro privacy, but even more than that, I'm pro information, so that at least whatever decision you're making is an informed one. I feel like if nothing else, we should at least be that far along. So you should, if you know, at a minimum, you should know if that company is collecting your data, what data it's collecting, and what they're going to do with it. And if you want to continue to hand it over to them, that's fine. But now you know this is what they're doing with it, as opposed to later, you know, when we find out, oh, by the way, you know, that old person face aging app, like, yeah, here's what you didn't know about that at the time. So that kind of stuff definitely needs to be discussed, and you will most likely hear more about it here. A good indicator when we're going to talk about that kind of stuff is when I have Andrew on the show. So thank you, Andrew, for bringing us that today. Right now, I want to talk to you about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is OmniFocus from Omni Group. OmniFocus is a to-do manager that is available on macOS as a universal iOS app and on your Apple Watch. It's a complication where you can view, add, and complete tasks right on your wrist. And OmniFocus will also remember everything for you. It gives you reminders based on all kinds of criteria like date or location or other kinds of stuff that you can that you can customize if you want to. If you are a getting things done methodology person, or like me, if you aspire to be that kind of person, OmniFocus makes a great trusted system because you can enter all that information into it from anywhere. This now includes OmniFocus for the web. So if you do have to spend a portion of your time on a PC, we don't judge you, but know that you can use OmniFocus there as well through your web browser. And you can upgrade to the pro version, get even more customization for viewing tasks, for upcoming looks. If you want to get a different perspective on things, you can use that as well. You can use AppleScript functionality and loads more. Download your free 2-week trial at omnifocus.com. And we'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show today. Now, Brian, you found, for our second topic today, you found an interesting filing in China about iPhone 11s.
Charlotte found that.
Charlotte found it. Sorry.
Yeah. So apparently, according to these Apple filings, and I guess Mac Rumors originally reported this. Let me make sure that that's where the credit should stop. Yeah. So according to these technical filings in China, the 11 Pro Max has a 3,969 milliamp hour battery, and that compares to a 3,174 milliamp battery in the iPhone XS Max, its predecessor.
Okay.
So that is roughly a 25% bigger battery, and that's pretty interesting.
And part of what makes that interesting is that the dimensions are not breathtakingly different to get 25% more battery life out of it, right?
Well, yes, but at the same time, they are different. The iPhone 11 Pro is thicker by 0.4 millimeters than the iPhone XS. Mm-hmm. And it also has a 25% bigger battery. And also, Johnny Ive is no longer with the company. Just hashtag just saying. You know, I've said for years now that no one is standing around saying I'd buy an iPhone if it was only thinner.
Right.
And that we all
not
want
one
more
person.
Battery life. Yeah. And then Dave pointed out in our meeting this morning that the iPhone XR, it is roughly, by the way, the same thickness as the iPhone XR and then the iPhone 11.
Yeah, we figured out roughly it's like half a millimeter bigger on like every side, I think. Like one side was 0.4 and then the two others were 0.5 millimeters.
But the 11, the 11 and the 10R are roughly the same size. Not even roughly. They're almost precisely the same size. It's the 11
yeah,
Pro
yeah, basically. Yeah.
That is also now as thick as the 11 and the 10R. So Apple really retreated on this last year with the 10R by making the 10R a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And but they've allowed that same thickness now to hit the, you know, the top end of the line, the you know, what used to be the 10 and 10S and is now the 11 Pro. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. And I'm glad to see this particular retreat. I am in that camp that wants more battery life.
Yeah, me too. Yeah I've never seen anybody say if only it was, you know, a thinner phone. Yeah.
When I read one iPhone 11 review, you know, they made the note that Apple has removed 3D touch and they use haptic touch instead. And this is important because 3D touch required a whole nother layer to the screen. I'm not sure how thick that layer was, but they thought maybe that contributes to the better battery life. Like they just filled that extra space taken up by the layer with, you know, more battery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely there's more to the story. And I always like to talk about Apple and battery life because I feel like they're always doing something really interesting with battery life and they're not always getting enough credit for it. So, that's part of what, like when we saw, I think it was the MacBook Air, Brian, you may want to, with the sliced battery, like the tiered battery to go with the angled shape. So they like the battery looked terraced so that there was, it was thicker.
Yeah. Apple has figured out ways to put battery cells in places that no one has figured out where to put them. And I'm sure that, I mean, if anything, I think that what they did with the Air probably actually originally stemmed from what they were, things that they were doing with iPhone and or iPad. I don't know that for a fact, but that's been my mindset on this for a while. And Apple's doing really fun things, but having a little bit of extra case space, that helps a lot too.
I think so. And that was another thing that I noticed. I know we did not spend a lot of time talking about what was not at the Apple event, but that was one thing that I noticed when we were looking at what had happened, you know, sort of in the aftermath, was we never got any Ests in the presentation of the new stuff. So there was no thinnest, there was no lightest, there was none of the stuff that we've come to expect. And another thing, like you said, another thing missing from that was Johnny Ive. So that may have had something to do with it. I don't know.
But at the same time, we also didn't get we listened to you. You know, our one thing that iPhone owners have long asked for is more battery life. And so it's slightly thicker, but look what we did with that. You know, they didn't go that route either. They just sort of didn't mention it other than saying it's got more battery life. You get 4 hours more on the 11 Pro than the 10S and 5 hours on the 11 Pro Max than the 10S Max.
Yeah.
And they, you know, didn't mention any necessarily how they got there.
Right. And those are significant numbers. And instead of spinning it as courage, which, you know, everybody rolled their eyes at, to be honest. And as well, I feel like it was totally justified. They could have said, like, we listen, they didn't have to say we made it thicker. They could have just said we gave you 5 hours more battery life and left it at that. And that would have been amazing. And everybody would have been excited about it. And it's definitely a thing that would have been an important spec, particularly given the amount of attention paid to Apple batteries in the last couple of years. It seems like maybe something they would have been excited to tell you. Look at all the battery life you would have if you ditched that 6S and got a new phone. So definitely a thing I was wondering about with that. But I'm at some point I did not get in on the 0 day shipments, but I will have an 11 Pro soon and I'm looking forward to more battery life with that. Brian, you're getting one, right?
I am. Yeah. I ordered the 11 Pro.
The 11 Pro. And Andrew, are you getting one?
I am not. I think I mean, the rumors so far say that the 2020 iPhone is going to be the big one, so I'm going to see if I can hold out for that one.
And what are you on now? I don't remember.
The 7 Plus.
You have a 7 Plus. Okay. Somehow I thought you had an 8, but apparently that's just me.
As excited as I am about the camera array on the 11 Pro, I love my 11, or excuse me, my 10S. And I probably, if I wasn't on the next plan with AT&T, which allows me to upgrade every year, I probably would not have upgraded for whatever that's worth, even though I think this camera is like, I can't wait to see what I can do with this camera.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Because Andrew's a great photographer.
Yes.
Well, thanks.
I do like your pictures, Andrew. That's where I'm at is for a long time, what was driving my upgrades was the camera and then whatever the other thing was, because I was getting them subsidized. When I was getting them subsidized through AT&T, it was and also Apple Pay. But it was always like, I get a new camera, which is awesome, and I get these other features or this other thing that I can do. And I'm super looking forward to this camera. But now I'm wondering if I need to put another year of miles on my 8, if, like Andrew said, if next year, if the 12 is the big one, maybe I need to hold out. But I don't know. That green looks super cool. We'll have to
see. Hey, Kelly.
Yes, Brian.
We got an email from Bob Harris.
We got an email from Bob Harris.
Yeah, and I think it bears mentioning because we said this. He's correcting something that we said yesterday.
Okay.
So, can I mention?
Yes, please.
So Apple Watch does not come with a free year of Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
And I didn't think so, but that's the sort of thing that John Martellaro usually gets correct, and when he insisted otherwise, it's like, okay. But it is iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, iPod Touch, or Mac. Not Apple Watch.
Not Watch. Okay. I thought it was me who said, I think the Watch, but I don't remember. But it may have been John. I didn't think so.
Regardless, we jointly colluded.
Yes.
To send out some misinformation. So thanks to Bob for correcting us. Yep.
Yes. And so if you were thinking you were going to get one with your watch, I'm sorry. maybe you need a new iPod instead. All right. I think that's going to do it for us for today. I want to thank both of you for being here. Andrew, thanks so much for dropping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good stuff.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I look forward to hearing from you about your new iPhone and if you're excited about the battery or not or what. Also, if you want to talk to us about the Ring cameras and the legislation conflict there, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I hope all of you have an awesome day. I will talk to you tomorrow. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.